We're going to try to classify all the simple Lie algebra. I'll die attempting. Okay. So this is our noble goal as we stated in the first class. And the approach for us to do this is in the first act of scenario, we're going to hunt for SU2s. As you might read the course outline, they are everywhere. And act two, we have from SU2 with love. So what did we get from SU2? A message. And with that message, we can make this awesome claim called, give me a protractor, I can conquer Lie algebra. So we'll see how this comes out. Okay, and the last part, we're gonna rank up. And then we wonder what lies beyond. So this guy only get us as far as rank two. Well, I made some solid attempts to draw in R equals three. I can get like two of them. So, okay. So I guess the most important thing is let's remind ourselves what we did about yesterday. End the tutorial. I hope you finished. I'll die trying. Okay, what did we learn about SU2? Well, we learned that the step we take is let's pick SU3. No, sorry, pick J3 to be our Katan generator. We only have one, which is nice. And then we say, let's diagonalize this and find the eigenstate of M. And that's our vector space. And then the next, we say, let's find the J plus minus such that the eigenvector of J3, which equals plus minus J plus minus. Okay, then we claim this guy's our raising and the lowering operator. And then we say, well, we should finish our Lie algebra and write this guy as well. And then from all this, we have a very interesting message. It says our spin can only be half integers. Okay. So actually for this guy, there's an interesting explanation why they are called eigenvalue equation. So let me try to understand this equation in the vector form. So remember these generators form a vector space, so I definitely can put them in vectors. And if you recall, in adjoint representation, this commutator, these two things, is really, say, J3's adjoint representation acting J plus minus. Now I'm more happy to call it the eigenvalue question, because this looks exactly like eigenvalue question. So this is what we learned from last class, is that we have SU2, we find a raising lowering operator, the most important conclusion is spin is half integers. So we shall follow our general recipe and move on rank two. It's like first order, second order, then we can do everything. Okay, rank two. The following what I said applies to other ranks as well, but the rank two is more interesting, as you will see in the tutorial. Okay, so in rank two, let's try to do the same thing again. First, let's find Katong generators. And remember, these generators form this Katong subalgebra, has the following property. So let's make a collection of them, because in general, there's more than one. And in general, actually, there is one to R, because that's what we define to be rank. And then they have the following property is that for any I, J, they all mutually commute. And this is also what we define the Katong generators. Of course, they satisfy this property. In general. So let's move on to rank two. Let's move. Well, we'll come back to SU2 later. But let's just say for any Lie algebra, we can always calculate all the commutator of all the generators, which you're going to do in the tutorial, for eight of them. Then we'll find two of them as maximally commuting. Hence, rank two. But if you have even more, then you are rank R. But what we require is they all have to commute with each other. And we have this Katong subalgebra. And this is, recall, this is called finding J3. Except finding J3 is much easier. Okay. Step two, we do the same. We form linear combination of other generators. Such that they are eigenvectors. By the eigenvectors, I meant if I add hi onto one of these things we found, I'll explain why I denote this way later, but you get alpha I, this guy. And we have I of them. I'm R of them, because it needs to be eigenvector for all this H. But since they are all mutually commuting, we can simultaneously diagonalize them. So this is achievable. So let me try to write it in a fancy way. Say, well, we have R components. Let's just call this a vector. And then this is the vector. So this is still one generator. Suppose we add our generators up with some combination. We found one guy. We found our eigenvector. We are happy. This is one generator. So this is really mimicking what we know as J3, J plus equals J plus. OK? So we did that. And as you know, why there is a subscript alpha vector alpha, because vector alpha is the eigenvalues for each of this R J3s. So under each of these Katong generators, this eigenvector vector will acquire an eigenvalue. And if I combine them together, I can write it as a vector in R. Oh, to our interest in R2. So let's look at this. And when I'm looking at this kind of thing, I always want to say, let me take an adjoint to see what happens. Right? We've done this before. Let me just take an adjoint of, because I found this guy. See what this guy tell me. I take an adjoint. And alphas are real, because we have simultaneously they are already, let's consider they are diagonal matrices. Diagonal real matrices. So they have real eigenvalues. Okay, so we have done this before. So we write out the commutator, apply this adjoint multiplication to each of them, and then you rewrite them back into the commutator, and what you get is this guy. Right? Question? This guy? I haven't do anything yet.
Oh, sorry.
I haven't done anything. I just say, let's put it into parentheses and take an adjoint. And in the next step, I decided to actually do the adjoint and find a commutator. As you pointed out, if now I want it to look like an eigenvalue question for each i's, I need to switch them. Now I develop a minus sign. And this minus sign is crucial. It tells us, if I just take the adjoint of E alpha, I get something has eigenvalue minus alpha, right? I can also be fancy and write it in my vector form. But wait a second, this is what I define. This, according to my labeling system, I should have labeled this state as E minus alpha, because it has minus alpha as its eigenvalue. So we learned a very interesting result, is that once you did all the work finding one generator that is our eigenvector, then you can save a lot of trouble. Just take the dagger of it. You immediately get the other guy, which has exactly opposite of the eigenvalue. Okay, they are given some names called weights. And if you are in adjoint representation, these guys are called roots. For some reason, for a long time, I thought it's because the person named it like root vegetables, like potatoes. But I don't know, they are called roots. This alpha vectors. I think there is some deep geometry meanings. So what we have accomplished so far is if I find a J plus, J minus is always there. And of course, thinking about our SU2, which is our favorite, the next step is of course ask us the following question. What's the commutator of J plus and J minus? SU2 gave us its J3. So the interesting question to ask would be what's E alpha and E minus alpha? What does this equal? Well, I don't know, I hope. My hope is that this is going to be somehow mimicking J plus J minus equals J3. So my guess, it has something to do with my Catan generator. But I shouldn't just guess. So let's try to figure it out. But before that, let's examine this E alpha we built. Supposedly, it should have a property called a raising operator. Oh, lowering operator. Later, we're going to try to have a system to define this guy as positive. But let's just take it to be raising operator for now. And the question, interesting question we ask is that let's take a state, which is a quantum state that has eigenvalues mu1 through mu r under our Catan generators. So this state satisfies this nice property. If I act hi on it, I'll get a mu i. This is also achievable because this is really J3. Acting on m give me m, except now I have a bunch of them. And hence, I have a mu vector to denote my state. You can just consider it's a bunch of M1, M2, M3. Okay. So now the question is, what does this do for us? So remember in SU2, we study that by acting J3 on J plus M and then realize this gives us M plus 1 J plus M. So in order to figure out what a raising operator do for us, we always check the eigenvalue under our Catan generators. So let's do that. So our question is, if I act HI onto E alpha onto this mu state, what do I get? Well, this is something we have get familiar with. This is just the commutator of these two guys plus these two guys switched act on mu. Right? And then remember, this is the commutator we already found. That's what we require E alpha to be. E alpha is such a guy that has eigenvalue alpha I. And HI acting on mu, because mu is a eigenvector, we pick up a mu I. Interesting. It does look sort of like a raising operator. If I act E alpha onto my vector, and I look for what is the state E alpha act on mu under HI. They say, well, this state basically says, so what we have there is this state is proportional to alpha plus mu. Right? Are there any questions? So we find this thing we found, yes, look like a raising operator. It's mimicking okay. Okay, good. Now let's come back to ask the question of this guy. Okay, so I'm going to use my same trick again and go to adjoint representation. It says this is a vector. And this vector is the adjoint representation of one of this guy acting the other. This is what we discovered yesterday. So that's how the generators in adjoint representation acting on the space formed by the generator themselves. Okay, this is interesting. It seems we just figure out how alpha act on mu. You just add the eigenvalue up. Let's look at this very profound result. Alpha plus minus alpha is zero. What do we mean by eigenvalue is zero? Actually, what do we mean by eigenvalue is zero under all possible HI? This means this guy is mutually commuting with all HIs. Right? That's what we mean by eigenvalue is zero, because we can calculate a commutator. Our eigenvalue is defined, the commutator is by this equation. So if I, okay, let me try to write that, write why this zero is so profound. Is that this tells me if HI acting on this state, I get a zero. Means this thing somehow commuting all with all the HIs. No, you don't, what? Question? Okay, no question, good. Okay, then, there is only one way this is possible. Is that this happens to be some linear combination of all HIs. Remember, we already exhausted, they searched all possible mutually commuting generators. There's no other ones. If you are still mutually commuting, you must be within this Catan subalgebra. Oh, that's good. Remember, our H is our J3s? This is very, very hopeful. Okay. So let's try to figure out what's this AIs. It's some linear combination. If we can figure out the combination coefficients constant, it would be even better. So what we found is that the commutator of this pair we just find is some linear combination of HIs. And our goal is to find this guy. And I, as I've already done so many times, so it shouldn't surprise you that I'm going to do it again and write it as this guy's adjoint acting on this vector. Okay, that's good, because now I know how to find AI. AI is just the matrix element of HI, of E alpha, adjoint between HI and E minus I. So we just like multiply by HI on the left side, and then only this guy will remain. Okay. Question? Right, this is the vector, yes? Mm-hmm. What I claim is that guy has eigenvalue 0 under HI. So if I write another HI in front of it, I'll get a 0. So what I claimed is that this guy is a eigenvector with eigenvalue 0 under HI, but it itself doesn't have to vanish. You can have a 0 eigenvalue with non-zero eigenvector. You all look confused. Okay, well, the hot here. Any questions? Yep.
If you've got skin, like skin half or something.
Yep.
Then I'll have the skin, then you can't have zero.
Right, but you can also have other cases that if you have spin one, you can have it, I guess.
Sure.
It does work. So, no, it only says that, okay. So what it's only saying is that, so this statement is coming from J3, commutating with J plus, J minus. Yeah, it doesn't work for spin half because spin half is not adjoint. This only works in adjoint. So if it's adjoint, you do have a 0. But this is really stating that this commutator is 0. This is what we called this commutator is an eigenstate of J3. So if I have proved this, so we can certainly conclude that this must be some multiplication of J3. So this is where the SU2 analog comes from. So basically what I'm saying is that if you have a state in minus alpha and you make a raising, you raise it by alpha, you reach 0. But eigenvalue 0 is defined in this way. Basically, eigenvalue 0 means this thing commute with H. And the only way for it to commute with H is itself is a bunch of H. Okay, is everybody with me now? Okay, so in adjoint, I'm going to take this equation again, write it as a operator acting on a state. And then I can try to find AI just by doing this. This is what we do a lot in linear algebra, right? that will pick up AI to be this guy. Yep. Very good. I think it's something I said the last time that I should have repeated it today, but I didn't. Is that remember yesterday, before we go to SU2, when we stay with adjoint representation, we ask us such a following question, is that a TA in the adjoint representation acting on vector TB, what do we get? And then we claim that we get TA, TB commutator. Okay, I'm sorry, I should have reminded this, like added all these recall things, although it's not SU2, but it's very, very important for today's discussion for us to figure out these AIs. So just remember, I'll be frequently switching from commutator to a generator acting on vector, because we have proved that this is indeed possible if we stay with adjoint. Okay. So then, let's calculate this. And I'll do it again. This is a adjoint acting on a vector. So again, I can write it as commutators. But this thing I know how to do. This is called, I have one vector, I have another vector, I'm calculating the inner product of two vectors. Right? Inner product is defined to be trace yesterday. So that's the only thing I want to get out of this switching back and forth using this relationship, is that I want to prove we can find these coefficients. They're nothing but the trace between these two vectors. I know how to calculate the trace. I just expand them. And then, remember, trace is cyclic, so I can always do something with them, changing the, just permutating them. So this is just some permutation of this guy, this is some permutation of that guy. Well, not permutation, it's a cyclic cycle of that guy. So we maintain a trace in that case. And then we realize I can pull the E alpha around and get a commutator out of this. And the good thing is that commutator I actually know. Well, it's the, I pull a minus sign out, then I switch those two guys. This commutator is the one I know. That commutator is the definition. This guy has minus alpha I under this commutator because it's a eigenvector. So if I pull the minus alpha out with this minus sign, we get alpha. We're left with trace E alpha, E minus alpha, which is E alpha dagger. Well, in orthonormal base, that's what. Okay. So basically my conclusion is AI is really just the alpha I's. Which actually makes sense. I mean, we only have that one vector. If we say, let's find E alpha, E minus alpha, and we know the commutator is proportional, is some combination of the H, and the most natural choice is this AI is nothing else but this alpha. Okay, any questions? So remember what we have done so far. What we have done so far is that after we find the Catan algebra, we can definitely find one of this E alpha. And then we realize if I just do dagger of this, I'll find another E minus alpha. They always come in pairs. Yes, question. Yep. That's good.
Is that a sum of the high and the
right? Right, right.
And so when you go down the lake down below, when you put in like the sum over k of hj,
yep.
That shouldn't be a sum over, like you should be taking a single and put up like the end of this.
Right, right. What I meant is if you sum over, you get a delta ij, and then so only one, oh, only one j and equals what? Ah, very good. I can just multiply by hi. Okay. Very good. Yes, you're right. We can just multiply I, yes, and rename this j's. And then they will come out. Very good. A single. Okay. So the line of logic is we find already a pair of E alpha E minus alpha. They satisfy the following commutators, which I think, I hope this looks like J3, J plus equals plus J3, J plus. And then I also have the other guy, I don't even have to find it, it's just there. And this guy, hopefully it looks like this guy. And then what we just talked about is say if you're commutating E alpha and E minus alpha, what we get is alpha dot H. So this is what we accomplished so far. We say if we follow this general recipe, if we can find some Catan subalgebra, alpha. Yes, good. Thank you. Because the first equation, I didn't use the vector notation. And this is alpha hi, so the dot product is defined on R2, or R to the R. Okay, so this is what we accomplished. We have a bunch of hi's. We have one e alpha, one e minus alpha, e minus alpha. It sort of look like lots of typos. It sort of look like our SU3, SU2. So this line sort of look like each other, but I prefer the coefficient to be plus, not a bunch of alpha i's. Similarly, this guy sort of look like that guy, but this coefficient I also don't like. And this one seems fine. I can just define this guy to be my J3. Okay, but if I divide this to J3, don't change this, then I don't agree with this guy's. So now we're just going to make an effort to get a SU2 out of this. Okay. What we accomplished so far is we get some commutator relationship. It looks close to a SU2. What I'm going to do next is actually make it look exactly like XU2. So what we're going to do is just a bunch of rescaling. We're going to define E plus is some rescaling of E alpha. E minus is the same rescaling of E minus alpha. And H is some rescaling of this alpha dot h. And then we demand that this e plus e minus h indeed looks exactly like our SU2. So our task now is we're just going to choose some rescaling constant such that we get an SU2 out of this. Okay? Any questions? This guy. Yep, thank you. A lot of minus I get lost today. So our first step is following our general recipe, get a pair of E alphas. Our second step is trying to say, look, I can just do some rescaling and get an exact SU2, as we know before, out of this. And this is good because we understand SU2. We spend a whole day on it. Okay, so let's do it. So let's just substitute A E alpha and A E minus alpha. We demand this equals to H. Okay, so this step is nice, is that I made some choice of parameters, and oh, I plug in my demand, so hopefully this will give me an equation that will let me solve what are those coefficients. And this is really a square times this commutator equals b times this guy. But we already know that part's equal. So first equation gave us the interesting information. A square is equals b. Okay, let's look at the next. The next guy says b alpha dot h. E plus is a times e alpha. And this guy supposed to equals A times E to the alpha. Right? Okay. So this guy, so A show up both sides. I just assume it doesn't exist. It will cancel. Okay. Then what do we got? Is B alpha dot H commutator with E alpha on the left. Because alpha is just a bunch of coefficients, I can also pull that guy out of the commutator. This is just a weird notation for alpha I times commutator HI E alpha I summed over. Okay, we know what's this guy. Again, this guy we know. This is our defining commutator for my E alpha. So it should equals to its eigenvalue, which is its subscript, E alpha. So this tells me B times alpha vector length square times E alpha should equals to E alpha. So we get this constant. This constant is 1 over the length square. And A square is B, so let's just pick A to be 1 over the length. Okay. Are you with me? Any questions? So what we're saying is we found the A subalgebra. It almost looks like ASU2. Let's just demand it to look exactly like SU2. And we did the following rescaling. And we found that if I say E plus is 1 over alpha E alpha, E minus is same thing, 1 over alpha E minus alpha, H is 1 over alpha square alpha dot H, then these three things form exactly SU2. It will have the same structure constant, same Lie algebra form. It looks exactly like H E plus equals plus E plus H commutator E minus give us minus E minus, and E plus E minus give us H. And this is our SU2. Question. No, everything I said so far worked for all ranks. But all ranks above rank, you know, all ranks that have some rank. So since we already did rank one, which is our SU2, we just want to go beyond that. Question. This is all in our adjoint representation because we have to use a lot of this, a lot of this fancy things that we put a commutator, understand a commutator as a operator acting on a state. And that statement can only be made in adjoint because our vector space is dimension n. We need an n by n matrix to act on it. Okay. So but now we're happy. So step one is finished. We found our SU2. Here it is. So we are basically through the majority of the derivation. And what we accomplished is that given me a Lie algebra, it's probably there is an SU2 somewhere hiding there. And we found it. Okay, very good. I'm going to erase board. If there's any questions, please ask. But the message, I mean, the lore is that in 45 minutes, we find one SU2. And I'm going to go to R goes to infinity in the next 30 minutes. How am I going to accomplish that? All right, let's try. I can just talk really fast. But let's try to actually just do that very fast. Because we really, really were so close. When we find SU2, remember it's our only hope. If every single Lie algebra has SU2, in some sense we understand them all in the following way. Okay. So now let's revisit something we already talked about. Remember, before we have a bunch of HIs, R of them, and we claim there are a bunch of J3s that we can diagonalize and find their eigenvector in the Hilbert space to be mu. Question.
Sure.
Right.
Now, saying you can find a copy of SU2 in there, is that the same as saying it's SU2 cross something else?
No. Very good question. That has nothing to do with that. We only say SU2 is a subgroup of all such simple algebra. But we said nothing about the SU2 with the relation to the rest of thing. We still have a bunch of other E beta, E gamma we haven't found yet.
But if you take, like, you know, take all the cosets.
Right.
Sure. Generated by SU2.
Sure. We can.
Another group. Is that other group going to be another Lie group?
That I don't know since we can take an easier pass.
Okay.
I can think about that if you ask me after that. I'll think about it, but that pass seems to introduce the concept of coset, which I try to avoid the whole thing. Okay, but the thing is, we know there is this eigenvector, but now we have a single H, which is my beautiful J3. We wonder what's its eigenvalue. So always a thing that we could wonder, but this guy is alpha dot h acting on mu. And of course, this is the eigenvector of all the h. So we just replace h by mu. See, this derivation is not hard, right? We got through those crazy part about a commutator and acting on vector. The rest is all like this. Okay, now is a question. This funny coefficient, alpha dot mu divided by alpha square, what values can it take? Let me emphasize again. This is my J3. And it's an eigenvector. Half integer. Half integers. Because, remember, this is J3. I build it as U2, and this is the thing corresponding to J3. If it acts on some eigenvector, the thing in front of it has to be half integer. This is from SU2 with love. This is the message we got. Is this guy is a half integer? Okay, so we learned something about the H. Of course, the next thing we're going to learn is what a J plus, our E plus, but it's really just a J plus going to tell us. Right? But this, we don't even have to do anything. We know it's SU2, so of course it's going to add 1 to my eigenvalue. That's what J plus does. If you add J plus on M, you add M plus 1. So if you add J plus, E plus to mu, you get whatever you have before. Add 1, right? I'm just going to write it in a slightly fancy way. I'm going to make a common denominator. It's just this 1 is actually alpha squared. So what I'm saying is that a vector mu will have a eigenvalue of this shape. So some guy has an eigenvalue of this shape, must have an eigenvector of alpha plus mu. Right? If you just compare h acting on mu gives this form of mu. This is, again, h acting on the state gives us this form times the state. So I can just say this guy, E plus acting on mu, must be proportional to mu plus alpha. So this raising operator did what we want. It raised mu to mu plus alpha. This is what we know as J plus acting M is proportional to M plus 1. Right? Are you with me? Okay, very good. Now I can draw this fancy picture. Remember last time I draw that what we understand as raising operator and lowering operator, we say that we start with some state in the middle. In this case, we start with this vector in the middle. We add a J E plus on it. We move to mu plus alpha. I can add an E minus. It comes back. I can add an E plus from mu minus alpha. And then I can add an E minus going down. Right? And what other second message from SU2? This series could terminate. We can find this finite representation. It will have a highest weight, J, because it's a SU2 algebra. We know all SU2 algebra has highest weight. The guy we built, H E plus E minus, since it is a SU2 algebra, it has to terminate. So this J is our highest weight. And at some point it's going to end. So you have that cute thing, alpha dot to some vector divided by alpha square. We know that thing is going to end at j somehow, right? Because, yes?
So even though we have an infinite-dimensional group, we're representing
on the space. Well, that's the same thing we did with SU2, right? We have all kinds of particles. We just decompose them to be, it's like we have a gigantic reducible representation. We're just looking at the erupts. Okay, so the first message from SU2 says you can only take half integers. The second message from SU2 says we are able to find such highest weight, which is also half integer. So this tells us, where am I from? I'm from this guy, alpha dot mu over alpha square, right? This guy, what do we just say? Is that suppose after p steps, I raise it with p steps. According to e plus, it's a raising operator. Its eigenvalue increased by p. This guy, at some point, will reach j. So suppose this process takes me p steps. And what SU2 tell us, which is more profound, is that if I take a q steps, I'll hit another barrier called a minus j. That's what we proved in SU2. There is highest weight, and there is lowest weight. Well, see, the thing is, we don't want to make our conclusions depend on which spin representation we're in. We want to get rid of this dimension representation. So we're going to do a fancy thing by adding two formulas together. So here is what we achieved. Let's call this master formula. This formula tells us the following truth. A half integer multiplied by 2, which is an integer, plus another integer, subtract an integer, is still an integer. Okay, that's called the integers form a group. It's like, what are you doing? You, for now, like we spend 55 minutes. Thing I tell you is an integer add another integer, subtract an integer is 0. Okay, so now is the moment of ascending. We're going to see something ridiculously beautiful out of this. So let's assume the following. See, we only did one pair. Remember, we have n generators. R of them are in the sub-Catalan generators. I pick another pair. I have another bunch. So for the other bunch, I can repeat step 2 and figure out there must be another pair called E beta E minus beta. But if there isn't, then we're done. If your thing has only one pair, then we're done. Then you have SU2. Okay. So if your group is more complex, if I repeat step 2, I'll find another pair. Okay. So this pair, as we say, the state is labeled by beta. So we can totally talk about the following question is that under the SU2 we just built, what H acting this eigenvector beta will give us? Well, we just figure out it must give us 2 alpha dot beta over alpha square. Right? We just say, well, you know, it works for all mu. It must work for some beta, which is also living in some adjoint representation. So basically, it works for roots as well. If it works for general weight, it works for roots. Roots are just the weight in adjoint. OK, what does that accomplish us? Huh? Oh, there's good question. There's no 2 there. It's after we do that fancy adding 2 equations and we get a 2. You are very good. OK, maybe I shouldn't do this. So remember, we started with n generators. I take a bunch R called a Catalan subalgebra. I take another two called EF and E minus beta. If we have something left, we can do linear combination again and find another pair, which is called E beta, E minus beta. I'm just repeating step two. Okay. So, but the thing is, so let's just write our master formula again. It says integer plus integer, subtract integer is an integer. This is what we do when we think the SU2 is built by E alpha, E minus beta. Then we act on vector beta. But wait, so the following I say is, I think it's very deep. There, I believe you have heard of this somehow. It says, all animals are equal, but some of them are more equal than others. This is very sad. But for SU2, all SU2 are equal to each other. They are all equal to each other. I could just do the entire derivation for another 15 minutes to show you if I start with a pair E beta, E minus beta, I'll arrive at the same formula that act on alpha. So all, I could just switch the two indices. Let's just switch the two vectors to represent that I have done all this calculation again with picking E beta, E minus beta as the basis that I build my SU2 of. They are all both SU2, so this formula must also work for the second SU2 I build. The only possible difference is maybe this guy will be in the spin J prime representation, so I have P prime, Q prime. Maybe it doesn't take me same number of steps to reach the highest weight, not the same number of steps to reach the lowest weight. But this formula as a whole, it should hold. Okay, now I'll do some very nice algebra manipulation that I taught to my eighth grader. It's called moving Q and P to the other side. And this must be valid. So now what I should do? Ah, very good. Thank you. I should earn some prize. Okay, thank you very much catching all my typos today. I think I'm just too excited. Okay, look at this two formula. What shall I do with them? What's alpha dot beta? What's alpha dot beta when you learn back, way back then? How do you calculate alpha dot beta? Right, so you have a formula that says alpha dot beta equals alpha beta times cosine theta, right? So what are we going to do? Well, the thing is, the alpha, beta, they are in different equations. No problem. We can multiply equations. I know how to do that. 1 times 2 gives me 4 alpha dot beta squared divided by alpha squared beta squared equals Q minus P Q prime minus P prime. I'm just multiplying them together. Except, I realize, wait a second, that's my cosine theta there. Okay, let me apply my trigonometry one, and I write this as cosine theta. Theta is the angle between alpha beta square, is integer multiplied by integer is an integer. Close the under multiplication. So this is my profound conclusion. It's that 4 times cosine theta squared is integer. But the thing is, we know about cosine function very well. It's bounded. Cosine squared is bounded above by 1, below by 0. And if it can only take integer value, it says it can only take 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Nothing else. So this is what I think group theory is very beautiful. The only thing I'm doing is finding SU2 and play around with them. But I reach this conclusion. For any simple Lie algebra, you draw the roots. They always form a certain angle. Which is always required to remember for the pre-meds, but I hope you guys also remember these angles. Okay. It's an integer. So let's see what integers they can take. Integer they can take is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 for cosine theta squared. So for cosine theta squared, we can take a 0, 1 over 4, 2 over 4, 3 over 4, 4 over 4. So cosine theta is plus minus 0 plus minus 1 half plus minus 1 over square 2 plus minus square 3 over 2 plus minus 1. And this can be solved exactly by drawing some triangles. Cosine theta equals 0 tell me it's 90 degrees. Plus minus 1 half gave me 60 degrees and 120 degrees. And that guy gave me 45 degrees or 135 degrees. 30 degrees or 150 degrees. 0 and 180. Okay, 0 and 180 is sort of not interesting. 0 means on top of each other. 180 means E up and E minus alpha. So the last one is kind of uninteresting. But the first ones are ridiculous. You give me a Lie algebra, somehow I already have a conclusion about all your roots without calculating any of them. So remember how we calculated roots, which you're going to do this afternoon, is get 8 generators, compute all the commutators. And that's why I should write this. You need a mathematics. Oh, you can just compute them, but I recommend this. Okay, you compute all the generators, all the commutators between 8 generators, find 2 of them actually mutually commute, and take them to be your H1 and H2, grab the rest, forming linear combination, making them into eigenvectors of H, then we can find the roots. But the whole process, before doing any of that, I already know these roots can only form these angles. Hence, there is a protractor. Remember I said, give me a protractor. I can conquer Lie algebra at rank 2 because I don't really know how to draw in rank 3. Rank 3 I can push, but the rank 4 really kill me. Okay. Let me draw this. This is my R2, right? It has rank R equals 2. The dimension is also 2 because the dimension of this root diagram is the same equals the rank. Okay. Let me draw the first one, 90 degrees. This one is nice, right? I can always normalize my first pair to be at 1, 0, minus 1, 0. I can just normalize that. And then what's the next one can be? Well, 90 degrees, so there's not many other choices. You lie on the y-axis. Okay, this is called orthogonal. Orthogonal is not very interesting because we have alpha dot beta equals 0. This tells us these guys living in a spin 0 representation of this SU2. This guy is a singlet, which is not as interesting as a doublet. So this guy, what do we call it? Is SU2, direct sum SU2. And this is one of the cases, indeed, this group is kind of boring. It just has 2 SU2. The way you find a representation is to find you representation of first SU2, some other representation of second SU2, we just power them up in block diagonal. You got a representation of this. We got there. Okay. So now we're going to do a very important thing, count parameters. Well, I mean count generators. You have two in the middle, because we rank two. Those two have zero eigenvalues, because they commute with each other, that's what we demand. Then you have four there, so this guy has n equals six. Let me give you more profound discoveries of integers. Six is equals two times three, which is equals to four times three over two, which hopefully remind you one of the most important formula in first class called n minus one over two. So we realize this guy is equivalent to SO4. So by drawing two perpendicular lines, we got SO4. Let's draw more perpendicular lines. Okay, next one. As usual, I cherry pick this guy to be my alpha minus alpha. And now I have to form 60 degrees to each other. Questions? Just form 90 degrees. So all vectors coming from origin.
Is it related
to the angle there? 90 degrees. Gives us SO4. See? The alpha vector and the beta vector form 90 degree angle. So that's given by our discovery here. So I say, let me explore 90 degrees, see where I, that gets me, that gave me SO4.
And how is the total number of negative 6?
1, 2, 3, 4. And those are the two from the Catan suburb. So there is H1, H2 always lie in the middle because they mutually commute. Question?
So if you're dealing with like a rank 3, the algebra then have 3 generators and 3 of these things.
Right? Very good. Very good. You put a 3 dots in the middle. Very good.
Yes. But you also have that 3 like alphas and betas? Or
you also have like alpha, beta, gamma at least.
Yeah. Okay. So how do we know that
right, that's a good question. I think how you figure out it's actually SO4, so you actually expand and find the generators, and then you do and find the roots, and you realize it looks like this. Maybe there is a profound theorem says that it's unique, but I haven't seen that theorem. If I once crossed it the same in some book, I'll definitely cite it and tell you. But now we're just going to do hand waving. We get a diagram, count the number of generators, think which guy this is. But somebody already classified this. So this is all truth. It's just I don't want to go through all the steps. Oh, I could have added a tutorial problem. Okay, but anyway, now let's move on to the next angle, 60 degree. So 60 degree is really saying, I'm just drawing equilateral triangles, right? That's 60, that's 60. This is basically cutting a pizza in 6 pieces. Then you get a hexagon. Okay. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Two in the middle. So now we have n equals 8. The profound number 8 question.
Why do you have to have profound
pairs? Very good. I'm going to explain immediately. But let's count up numbers. I like this part because this is 3 squared minus 1, which is n squared minus 1. So this is the adjoint. SUn. Ah, we found SU3, which is our tutorial. We're going to study this in a very thorough way. But let me first tell you why I have to have all of them. So it's actually. Truly, there is part of the story I can't tell due to the limit by the time. But the idea is that, so there is an idea of called simple roots. So all these roots can be generated by simple roots. So first, you draw a line across origin and just call one side positive, the other side negative. And this is always possible. As long as you don't draw the line across the roots, then there's ambiguity. But otherwise, you all can always call one side positive and one side negative. And see, if I choose this guy, choose alpha and beta, gamma is really just alpha plus beta. So gamma is a combination of alpha and beta. And the idea is that, well, so according to our reasoning, the lowing things, it seems alpha plus beta should be in my lattice system. But there's another reason is that, okay, I'll refer you to Georgi, but this two will be referred as simple roots because other roots can express by them with positive coefficient linear combinations. In this case, when you do alpha dot beta over alpha square, what you get is the spin. So if I do this, this is 1 dot 1 times cosine 120 divided 1 gives me 1 half. That tells me this guy living in the, remember we built an SU2 from here. So this guy lives in spin 1 half representation of this SU2. So it must have a spin 1 minus 1 half to come with it. Because spin 1 half has 2 states. You can't just have one state not having the other. But there is like a very long derivation that I can't condense into 5 minutes to say why you have to pick these two, why you have to have the positive coefficient, and why this end up to be the spin. But there is a several pages, almost 3 or 4 pages, that tells you if you do that, then this two simple root will give you the spin. And that will determine how many I should add alpha onto it. So you could really think, can I add another alpha on it? You can't, because spin 1/2 has 2 states. You can't have 3 states of a spin 1/2 representation. Okay, I guess we'll do the 45 degree and the 30 degree with projectors this afternoon. Okay, let me say the final remark. Is that we realize giving me a protractor, I can conquer all the rank 2 Lie algebra. And now it's the time to rank up, to figure out what about all the ranks. That's called a physicist's approach. So now let me introduce some notation. So this notation is introduced by Dinkin, says if I have 2 simple roots forming a 90 degree angle, then I just draw 2 dots. If it forms 60 degree angle, it has 1 line between them. If they form 45 degree angle, it has 2 lines. 30 degree has 3 lines. And that is trivial, so we don't talk about it. So Dinkin diagram says, for a R, so says, how to read this diagram? Says, rank R, the algebra, will have R dots. They are connected by these lines. And you read from this table, what do these lines mean? So in this notation, our SO4 is just 2 dots because they are perpendicular to each other. And this guy is way more interesting. It has 1 single line between them. So if you say this, this is our SU3. Of course, SU2 is 1 dot because it's rank 1. And this is what we call the A series. So this guy is the same series as SU2 has rank 2. And then, if you follow the history of the classification, and using Dinkin diagram notation, you will find these beautiful results. It's a bunch, but that's exhaustive. That's all we get. So this guy says, I have R. Since rank R has R dots, they all form 60 degrees. If they're touching, they form 60 degrees. Of course, if they're not touching, they're perpendicular. So this is the A series, also known as SU1, which generated from our SU3. And this is B series, says that
Most of them are just forming 60 degrees or perpendicular to each other, but then there is this pair forming 45 degrees. And if you look at them, as you will in the tutorial, this guy is called SO2N plus 1. Actually, I have a B3 cubic I can bring in the tutorial. All the roots are on the tube. Like, it's a weirder shape to tube. But all the roots on it, I find it very beautiful. And this guy just means there's one root shorter than the rest. As you will discover with the protractor, it will happen in B2 as well, except the B2 you call, B2 and the C2 is the same thing. It's just that this guy says one of them is longer than the rest, this one says one is shorter than the rest. And the one shorter guy corresponds to our SO2N plus 1. This guy has some funny name called a symplectic N, which we never talk about. But this guy is our SO2N. We can sort of say that at 2, I guess. At 2, we just have the tail. The tail has two dots, has no line. That's our SO4. And then there is this weirder thing, but you're going to discover J2. So we're going to discover J2 in the tutorial together. But then there's this weird thing. Some people might, if you ask the string theorists, they'll think this is way more pretty than SU2. It's something like 78 dimension. That's actually complex dimension, 156 really. This guy. And this guy has 248. But they think these are more pretty. But then you have to ask them why. But then this line tells us how their simple roots look like. I just think, I should show this diagram. I'm not going to prove at all.
Circles
are your simple roots.
It's colored simple.
Oh, these are just shorter. So when you draw, these two have alpha and beta same lengths. But in a tutorial, the next two you're going to draw, you have to make some of the roots longer than the other ones. And the symbol just means this guy is shorter. So if you draw B2, it just means one short, one long. We don't have C2. If you draw G2, you are also three lines. If you draw G2, you will also realize there is one has to be longer than the other, or else they wouldn't all form 30 degrees, or all form 45 degrees. So these are coming from this constraint of these angles. If you stick with our angles, then you have to have one root long. But anyway, that concludes this class. But I hope this doesn't conclude your study of this beautiful subject. At least I recommend you to go to read Georgia about the tensor product. That has give us a very profound explanation why if we put a color and anti-color together, we'll get a gluon, a gluon ball. But anyway, so we'll see these things back in QFT2 and the standard model. But this is the end.